one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, what a fun weekend at Citizens Bank Park this weekend as the Phillies took both games on Saturday and Sunday. They won the series that began on Thursday against the Mets, but they just humiliated the Metropolitans on Saturday and then Sunday night baseball on Peacock with Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper absolutely going off. So we're going to talk about a really fun weekend. We'll talk about Schwarber and Harper, where the team is right now. They also got a couple of great pitching performances on Saturday and Sunday, and that got lost in the shuffle with all the home runs flying out of Citizens Bank Ballpark. But we'll also take a look at the schedule coming up now through the rest of the All-Star, up until the All-Star game, really in the Phillies' favor in one specific way, and then in another way, not so much. Lots to get to here on this roundtable edition of Hittin' Season. And being a roundtable, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher are both here. Liz Rocher is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, hello, hi, and howdy. How are you?
I'm great. Instead of watching the next games, I might just go back and watch the previous three over, or at least the previous two over and over and over again.
That's the beauty of YouTube.
It was such a fun weekend. I can't believe those two games were sent from the universe. They were just so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a maddening team. It can really get on your nerves, and then they can just come out and they can give you a weekend like that where you're just like, oh, that's why I like baseball. I forgot. That's why this sport is enjoyable to me and why I've followed it for 30 years. Ah, that's right. Okay, very good. Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus, also author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were up to while Joe DiMaggio was setting the world on fire with his hitting streak. I ad-libbed the subtitle there, Justin, but you can, of course, get that book at Brookline Books. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. How you feeling, buddy?
Pretty good, pretty good. Using Phillies history as a jumping-off point, last night, the Phillies played the Mets on Sunday Night Baseball, so they got the Sunday Night Baseball treatment, which means you typically get, notes from national writers that you, someone who follows the Phillies more regularly, probably know a greater level of detail about. And one of those notes from Ken Rosenthal was noting something about Jim Bunning's perfect game, and then noting that he did serve as a senator, I believe, from the state of Kentucky in his post-playing career. And John Kruk noted that Jim Bunning was an unbelievably nice man. And I could not agree more that Jim Bunning unbelievably would be described as a nice man. And I just have to note that pretty famously, Jim Bunning had an interaction with ABC News in which he gave everyone the finger after saying, I'm not talking to anybody. He held up funding for a project and said, tough S, as far as his response goes, and then complained that the hearings were keeping him from being able to watch a basketball game, a Kentucky basketball game he wanted to watch. And in 2006, Time Magazine called him one of the five worst senators in America, saying, in addition to being hostile to staff members on the Hill and occasionally even other senators, Bunning shows little interest in policy unless it involves baseball, according to congressional experts and colleagues. So I just wanted to circle back on that and say that, yes, Kruk was right. Jim Bunning being nice is quite an unbelievable statement to me.
I mean, I'm sure he was maybe nice to Kruk, but, you know, on the whole, I don't know. But, yeah, it doesn't seem great. Doesn't seem great.
The guy who struck me as nice just not being a word. Like, regardless of where you stand politically, niceness is not something that's on display in those well-documented stories. But like you said, yes, I'm sure he was nice to Kruk.
Former athletes do not make the best politicians most of the time.
No.
They really and truly don't.
They should not do that.
Even just policy aside, you can agree or disagree with policy, and the person is still like a person who cares about other people and whatever. But you know, like Tommy Tuberville is just one of the worst senators.
It's one of the worst humans. Yeah, like, that's the thing. These people tend to run for office, and they're not just, they used to be great athletes and told by everyone that, God, you're so awesome, you're so good. And now they're in politics and they just don't care.
That's
no one's
correct.
Telling them they're awesome, so they're just going to go home and do whatever they want.
Well, what was awesome was, see, I'm doing a segue. It's a professional segue here. What was awesome was, thank you for that, Justin, was the Phillies this weekend against the really terrible Metropolitans at Citizens Bank Park. It was a party this weekend. The Phillies humiliated the Mets. You hate to see it for New York. Real rough scene for the Mets. And this weekend, it was the stars that carried the Phillies. You had Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler. Those four guys. And you know, you had some good work from the bullpen, but you didn't really need it on Saturday and Sunday. The stars carried the Phillies. And I think what's clear to me is that if the Phillies are going to go anywhere in the postseason, it's going to be with Bryce Harper, not hitting for the cycle all the time, but Bryce Harper making the kind of, it wouldn't hurt, making the kind of impact that he made over the weekend. It's going to be Kyle Schwarber hitting a bunch of home runs in a short series that just overwhelms the opponent. I mean, that three-run home run in the second inning on Sunday night, game's over. It's 2-0. He hits a three-run bomb. That game is over. The Mets are not getting up off the mat after that. And so he's able to do that in a way that no other Phillies players are. Those are your two best guys. If they're red hot, this offense can almost run by itself. You don't need much else. You don't need a whole lot of other contributions. So you get a 15-3 win on Saturday. You get a 6-2 win on Sunday. The Phillies are now 42-35. That's the sixth best record in Major League Baseball. They were 9-19, and they now have the sixth best record in Major League Baseball. Since Mattingly became the manager, they are tied with the Brewers for the best record in the game. No, they have the best record. Half a game better than the Brewers at 33-16. The Brewers are 32-16. They've won five of their last six series. And here's this, Justin. The Phillies are now just 6.5 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. That is their smallest deficit since April 19th. You said it was over. What do you say now?
I'm wrong a lot, but I don't recall.
I don't remember if Justin actually said it was over. I just wanted to point at the camera.
The show has changed tone.
I feel like when the team breaks off a couple of really good looking wins, we kind of point at what worked and say that has to keep working. And you're absolutely right that Bryce Harper finding whatever he needed to unlock the Bryce Harper that I feel like everyone's largely felt was still in there, if not visibly or outwardly. That's obviously huge. Kyle Schwarber hitting four home runs in two games is obviously huge. And continuing to do that, and this is the important part, being able to rely on an output that strong and consistent, yeah, that's obviously what you're going to need moving forward. Can you expect to get that from June 22nd till the end of the season? No, not from this team. Which is why it's also true that other things need to work. And yes, the biggest pillars are going to be Harper in the lineup. The biggest pillars are going to be Schwarber in the lineup. Biggest pillars are going to be Sanchez and Wheeler leading the rotation. If we give the Phillies a good start, get them a five, six run lead. You're off to the races. You know, even this team's more wobbly ends of the bullpen can make 5-6 runs stand up. They can do that. But you also need moments like Edmundo Sosa running out that grounder and being safe at first and allowing a run to score. You need little things like that to work out too. And you need to make changes like the Phillies just did by sending Painter down. And yeah, the alternative is not very pleasant either, but clearly that was a kid who needed something to work on. And that was essentially a scheduled loss was Andrew Painter coming up and spotting the other team 5 or 6 runs and then coming out before the third inning. You can't keep doing that either. So it's as much as it's about the biggest pillars the Phillies have continuing to support them in the way they have. It's also going to be about the changes the Phillies make moving forward. You know, we're hearing Dave Dombrowski's very hot and bothered to acquire a number 5 starter, which is always a sexy market to be dipping into. But you also need smaller contributions from the peripheral guys, too. And the Phillies got a lot of that this weekend. But yeah, mostly on display were the big guys, because when they contribute, it usually is the loudest and in some cases goes the farthest.
Well, the balls go the farthest, certainly, that way. You see what I did there. Yeah, Kyle Schwarber with the two home runs in a single inning on Saturday night, both going over 450 feet. I think I said he was the first player in Major League Baseball this year to have over 900 feet of home runs in a single inning, which I think is a very random but fun statistic. Liz, what was your favorite on Saturday? You had Bryce Harper hitting for the cycle, and then celebrating at third base, and he was animated on the field in a way we rarely get to see from him anymore, just completely pumped up. It was just so much fun to see him react that way, like how badly and how openly he wanted that cycle. He wanted that triple. It was just one of those things like, yeah, he really wanted that. He was going to try for third the second the ball touched grass in the outfield. But then you also had Schwarber with two home runs in the same inning, three home runs in all in that game on Saturday. I mean, I'm sitting here right now. I don't know which one was my favorite. I thought they were both amazing, and I couldn't give you a favorite. Do you have one that you like more than the other?
I do. I'm going to go with my man Harper. He has wanted that moment again since 2022. He's wanted to feel that love from the crowd. He wanted to feel like, it seems to me at least, that he wanted to feel like he accomplished something. It was a team effort, but individual accomplishments are very important to him, no matter what he says. So just like you said, he was going to go for third that moment, and he was going to make it happen. And that's what makes Bryce Harper different from a lot of players. Every player wants to make something happen, but Bryce Harper is that special player that can actually do it. And we've seen him do it. And it was nice to see that Harper back. He's been getting closer and closer to that guy as the season's been going on. And he's found him. He was animated on the field for the rest of the game. He was so excited, such a positive presence. And it's not great that he sort of needs something like that to be the sort of like the super amazing best version of himself. But the fact that he's still in there and we can see it, and I just love that moment. He was just like holding his arms up and the crowd was giving him all of the love that he wanted. I'm like, this is baseball. This is the best baseball. This is the best version you can get of baseball at this moment.
And I think too, going back to last year, the Phillies have really become Kyle Schwarber's team more than Bryce Harper's team.
Yeah.
You know, and even on Saturday night, you know, it Schwarber's night, I don't know if it overshadowed Harper's night. I still feel, Justin, like Harper was the story. It was the bigger of the two stories on Saturday night, because the cycle is a pretty rare thing. Although Phillies hitters have been hitting for the cycle in a yearly basis, it seems, over the last few years.
Man, looking at that list was refreshing, because all we said for years was David Bell, David Bell, David Bell, David Bell. And finally, yeah, it's JT Realmuto, Weston Wilson, I forgot, was on that list.
Oh, my God.
And now you got Harper, which is, you know, deeply appropriate.
I think Trey got one, too. Didn't Trey get one with the Phillies as well?
I mean, the point is that we're well insulated from David Bell at this point.
True enough.
That's one of the blessings of an era like this, is that we can put milestones like that on more contemporary, or let's say deserving, players. I did say Weston Wilson's name. The point is that Harper, you know, we're talking about the kind of player he is and everything, like that moment where he's going for third. It's one of the best moments you can be in person seeing a ball game, is watching a guy have a shot at and decide to stretch a double into a triple, especially in a moment like that, where like something's on the line. I think the only thing like more exciting is an attempt to get an inside the park home run when you got a really good shot at that. There's kind of nothing like, you know, everybody's watching the World Cup right now. When a guy's coming in to like, you know, get a shot on goal in that moment, like there's not something super comparable to that in baseball, except this, where a guy is like going for it. You're not sure if he's going to make it, but there's a lot on the, and the place is going to go nuts if he actually does it. And Harper lives for that moment. It might be the last thing that makes the hair on the back of his neck stand up. He's been playing baseball for so long, because people were talking about, oh, he's always been this kind of player. They were saying that all across the broadcast. And the truth is, he has always been this kind of player, but they were framing it like, oh, he's exactly the same as he was. And the truth is, he's not. And they even said specifically, oh, he's still willing to like run through a wall. And metaphorically, yes. And I'm saying all of this, and I mean it as a compliment. It's a positive that he's not the kind of player who's like recklessly going to throw his body through a wall because he thinks he's the Tasmanian devil. He's matured and gotten smarter, but he still uses those instincts to like go for it. Those like bam bam kind of style plays where he got his nickname like that. Like those instincts are still in there. They're just more honed and they're more sharpened. He's probably more of a showman now, even more of a showman, but he's just got more of that experience that he's able to tap into. I think it's rare at right now that you're going to see him make a decision like that and see it like totally and embarrassingly not work out, which is great, because that brings me to my next point. in that you see that the opposite of that with the Mets. You see that in Juan Soto trying to do a Bryce Harper impression and getting thrown out by 10 feet and then looking around like, oh, I didn't realize that could happen. As well as the Phillies played this weekend, there were some moments about the Mets that just were like, does Francisco Alvarez have an uncompetitive at bat quota he's got to reach every year? Every time I look up, this guy's just like, let's just get it over with. Swinging at everything and then the game is over. Like,
I'm so hungry. I want to go.
They look like they just do not want to be there in some cases and make decisions that just make you go, what? And I say that after watching the Phillies for the last, you know, few decades. But yeah, I as far as like moments from the weekend, one of my favorite Philly sports writers, Les Bowen, was talking about how it might be time to change the name of the upper deck to Schwarberland or the Schwarber deck, or like give it some kind of like formal nomenclature, because he owns that. He owns that there. And for a generation, yeah, that's just going to be the guy everybody remembers hitting home runs up there. And it's time. It's time to do some formal changing of the name for Kyle Schwarber, because he's just hit too many bombs up there.
Really was, it's just like an incredible how power play.
There was something named after Chase Utley at the Mets Stadium. Utley's only corner. Yes, exactly. Only it's better because it's our stadium and it's one of our players.
That's right. There is something really fun about having a Philly have a special corner named in a Mets stadium. Like, you know, yes, it'd be like.
I love that.
I don't think the Mets called it that for the record, but yes,
no,
everyone
probably
else
not.
Did.
I doubt they're marketing that. But
I don't think they put it on the wall or anything. They didn't have like that. That Monty's Angle label, I doubt they felt obligated to do that. But yes, it's true that everybody called it that.
I think one of the fun things about Harper, and this was in Matt Gelb's Athletic story that came out after the game, was he'd been in a slump for the last couple of weeks, like really not hitting well at all coming into the game on Saturday. So a couple different things. He decided to use a 35-ounce bat. It's a bat that's 3.5 ounces heavier than his normal bat. It's a bat that he uses before the game down in the cage for batting practice. So that when he gets into the game with his regular bat, it's a lighter bat. You would imagine that it helps him with his bat speed and gets around on fastballs faster and all that. But he just decided he's going to use the heavy bat in a game for whatever reason. And then instead of doing his pregame hitting in the tunnel, in the cage, he almost never does outdoor batting practice. He usually doesn't hit with the rest of the team. And that's not unusual. A lot of star players do that. They feel like they can work on things better. They can be more zeroed in on specific things that they want to work on. But he said that he just wanted to kind of go out there and he wanted to hit bombs. He's like, I'm just going to go out for batting practice today. I'm not going to try to work on anything. I'm not going to try and do it. I just want to go out there and have some fun. Just go out and hit bombs. And he was hitting balls into the third deck, he said. You know, they were trying to hit balls out of the stadium. And it carried over. Feels like it carried over. Like that carefree feeling and spirit carried over into the game. First of all, the bat speed is still there with the 35-ouncer. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to start seeing more fastballs, because that's like trying to swing a boat oar at the plate. But, you know, it is interesting that this heavier bat, he obviously was stinging the ball all over the ballpark on Saturday and Sunday, because he had another 3 hits on Sunday, including a home run on Sunday. He also talked about his base running style, because obviously the base running style is what got him the triple, because he never slowed down rounding second, even though he was only like 10 feet away from the second base peg when the cutoff man had the ball. Cutoff man fired it home, thinking they were going to get Schwarber at the plate and cut off the 11th run. Okay, yeah, that was smart. Harper would have been out by 20 feet if they'd thrown it to third base. And generally speaking, I think normally you'd say Harper advanced to third on the throw home, but because he never stopped running, he didn't advance to third on the throw home, even though it looks like it, he gets credit for the triple. Now, I wonder if in another stadium with another stadium's scorekeepers, whether or not they give him the triple or if it's a double and advancing to third on the throw home. But regardless, that was a little bit of controversy after the game, was whether or not he actually deserved to get the triple there. But I thought what he talked about after the game in terms of his base running was even better. Go ahead, Justin. Let's talk about that in a second. What do you think?
Oh, no, I'm just reacting to the idea of someone not deserving a cycle, something that doesn't get you like a formal medal. They're not sending the ball to the Hall of Fame. It's literally just a thing. And also, you know, with the cycle, it's always like, yeah, it's kind of luck that a double, sure, one of your two doubles on the day turns into a triple.
Right.
You know, triples are weird in that regard.
Right.
It's more
they
about the cycle is more about, can you hit a triple today? You know, like a lot of guys have come a triple short of a cycle. A lot of guys have come like a single short of a cycle. A cycle has a lot more to do with I think, luck. You're having a 4-for-4 day. That's a great day. You tell me any of these guys wouldn't rather go 4-for-4 with 3 doubles and a home run than, you know, a cycle or 4 home runs, which, you know, Schwarber was close to doing. So, acting like he didn't deserve it. It's just like, no, a cycle is just shorthand for it. This guy had a very hot, very versatile day at the plate. That's all it is. You know, it's not like I'm not trying to downplay it. It's just, you don't need to, you deserve it. And at Citi Field, I think you're right. He doesn't get credit for that triple.
No.
But who cares?
Yeah. Right. You're right. The cycle is all about the triple. That's really what it comes down to. And he was he on Sunday finished a triple shy of the cycle. On Sunday, he got 3 hits and wasn't able to come up with another one of those triples on Sunday. But Liz, what I liked is what he said about his base running after the game too. He said, "I'll tell you what, I don't really care what people think about my base running because that's how I've always played. I've done it since I was 7 years old. I don't really play a different way when I know I can try to get to second base. I've made mistakes on the bases. I'm going to. Little kids are going to do the same thing, and I'll preach to them that they just play the game hard. If they get thrown out at second or third, then so be it. If I don't do that tonight, then I don't have the opportunity to hit for a cycle." So, love the aggressiveness from Bryce Harper. I appreciate the message. When you're up by 10 runs, absolutely, you're thrown out by 20 feet, no one's going to care. But you still can't make like the third out of an inning of a close game at third base, you know, like there's still got to be. But I think that's where Justin was saying he's gotten smarter about it than he used to be, Liz. And so I like the intent behind what he's saying. And I just like that he's kind of just, he just felt with this answer and everything else and his actions before the game, he was different over the weekend. He just seemed like a different player. Like he just decided, hell with it. I'm just going to do what I want to do.
I like that. And I like that it's Schwarber that does it because he seems very buttoned up, very attached to his routine. I really loved what he said. And even, I mean, yeah, you say you can't make the last, you know, out of an inning at third base. You clearly can, and he's done it. But part of it is that he's lived to tell the tale about it. And, you know, it didn't kill him. You know, he's really thinking about kids and being a role model in that moment, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I adore that about him because not a lot of players try to do that just normally anymore. A lot of them are, you know, I'm playing my game. This is what I'm paid to do. And that's fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But Schwarber seems to go out of his way to find moments to relate to, you know, younger kids, aspiring players. And that just, you know, displayed that in spades. That's why it's his clubhouse now. It's not anything that Bryce Harper did or didn't do. It's that someone like Kyle Schwarber is naturally suited to that role so much that it just sort of happened naturally. It doesn't make Bryce Harper any less than he is, but it just shows how perfect Kyle Schwarber is for this moment, for where he is right now in his career and his life. Everything is just spinning. Everything is working, and it's great to see. You know, he takes a chance and decides, I'm going to use this giant bat, and I'm just going to swing today. And it works for him. You know, take a chance. These are the lessons that kids, you know, you want to teach children. You know, take a chance. Don't be afraid to be embarrassed and screw up. You don't know what could happen. Yeah, it might be embarrassing, but look at me. I'm still here. I you know, made the last out at third, you know, in an inning, and everyone laughed and they said mean things on the broadcast. But, you know, I'm here and everyone forgot about it.
The difference between an aggressive player who comes through and everyone says, wow, this guy's awesome. He's tough and he takes chances and everything. And the guy who's also aggressive, but goes 0-for-5 in attempts at being aggressive, that player gets labeled reckless and irresponsible and clueless on the base paths. And it takes that extra experience to be a true, like an effective aggressive player. 'Cause you can be as aggressive as you want and get thrown out at second, trying to steal a million times in a row. Trying to take that extra base. But if you're smart about being aggressive, you're a much more valuable player. In the same way that swinging a heavier bat doesn't solve all your problems. But if you're a player who could swing a heavier bat than you're currently swinging, then you're going to get more momentum, you're going to make harder contact, and the ball's going to go farther. And if you're Bryce Harper, that's great news. But like, you know, he's a player for whom that is specifically suited. And it's, it, you know, making those adjustments is what I would expect from a player of his caliber and with his experience.
His OPS jumped from 837 to 896 over the weekend. Bob Wankel on Twitter noted it's the biggest two-game jump in OPS ever for any Phillies player with at least 250 at-bats in a season. And his 896 OPS now leads all National League first basemen. So as we're getting ready for the All-Star game, a good time for Bryce Harper to kick it into overdrive. As for Kyle Schwarber, obviously, the three home run game on Saturday and then another second deck home run on Sunday Night Baseball. The legend of Schwarber continues to grow. 29 home runs now for him on the season, the most by a Phillies player through their first 77 games of all time. He is two ahead of Ryan Howard's pace from 2006. He's on pace for 61 home runs. I did not think he was going to match the pace of last year. When this season started, I thought that's just going to be like the legendary Kyle Schwarber high point, you know, like he's going to have another 40 to 45 home run season. But I was not expecting another 50 home run season, upper 50 home run season. And who knows, you know, it may not happen. But right now, the pace he's setting, he is better than he was a season ago. And this is a statistic I'm sure most of you have seen during the course of the last couple of days. It was on the broadcast. His 216 home runs as a Philadelphia Philly is now tied for third most in a player's first five seasons with a club in Major League history. The others are Babe Ruth, who had 235 in his first five seasons with the Yankees, and Mark McGwire, who had 220 home runs in his first five seasons with the St. Louis Cardinals. And there is still a lot of time left here in the 2026 season for Schwarber to catch one or both of them. You know, Justin, I don't know what's left to say about Kyle Schwarber at this point. He's just the legend grows, the legend continues, and just when you think you can't get enough Schwarber, he gives you more. It's just he's just provided so many unbelievably fun moments, especially at Citizens Bank Park here over these last couple of years. Really just incredible.
Looking at the Phillies all-time home run leader list, he's currently tied with Jimmy Rollins. He'll leapfrog over Cy Williams, Greg Luzinski, Chase Utley. I'm not doing any math, but I guess Chuck Klein possibly on the table.
He could get to sixth, I think I saw, like if he continues at this pace.
So that would be over Utley, but not Klein. Which, you know, if you're sixth in any franchise's home run leaderboard, you can say, you know, I may not be a Hall of Famer, but I was certainly an impactful one. And nobody's going to argue with you about Kyle Schwarber's impact on the Phillies. We don't have to sit here and say who had, you know, who's having a bigger one, like who wound up having a bigger impact on these Phillies, Schwarber or Harper, because the point is you don't have to decide. They're both on the team. That's what makes the difference here for the Phillies is the years ago when we considered them a team that was willing to go out and spend anything to get anybody. They went and got Bryce Harper and they went and got Kyle Schwarber. And it was also good news at the time that they went out and got Nick Castellanos. But the two guys who actually were able to hit are still here and they're doing absolutely, you know, exactly what you wanted them to do. And an age where the Phillies are having to, you know, enter a season with a few more question marks than a team with a $300 million payroll should have. It's great to see that some of the, you know, two of the best players on the team are still contributing at the level, perhaps even higher than you thought they were going to this season. And Schwarber, being a guy, the kind of guy who is like, maybe until Munetaka Murakami came along, the only kind of guy he is in baseball, still playing at that level, just kind of like, just leave him alone. Just leave him alone and let him do it. Let's leave him out of the whole, like, well, you're getting older, 30s, windows closed. Just let him keep doing what he's doing. He apparently might just do it forever if you leave him alone. So from the moment
that's
he got
DH,
here.
That's man.
Yeah, that's right.
The moment he got here and hit that home run on opening day 2022 and was out of the dugout, fist pumping with the crowd, to this weekend when he hits three homers in a game, I mean, you just can't argue that, yeah, sure, you can point to dry spells. You can point to any hitter in this lineup having a dry spell. But Kyle Schwarber has consistently hit the crap out of the ball in ways that have been fundamental to this offense, saved it even at times, that keep the Phillies in games, that wins the Phillies games, that gives them comfortable leads, that gives them insurance, that makes the pitching staff feel better so that they can pitch better, that makes the other guys who might be struggling feel like it's not all on them. the impact across the board and the leadership we've seen from Kyle Schwarber, I mean, you know, you're just not going to be able to replicate that, not easily. And that's why he is just he's just one of the most, if not the most important presence on this team for this era. You can't argue.
I remember in the offseason when we were like, will they sign him? Will they sign him? And, you know, we were envisioning a nightmare scenario without him. And seeing what he's done this season, you know, it would have been even worse if they hadn't. Like, you look at what he's done and you know they had to sign him. There is no way they were going to leave the offseason without signing him, because they know even better than we do, with so many numbers and whatnot, how important he is to the club, how important he is to their success. He's in many ways the engine that powers things forward, because he hits a home run and everybody wakes up. It's like a mini firing of the manager in every game. It's like a little tiny version of that. He hits a home run and everyone's like, oh, we could do that too. Yeah. This is great.
Harper and Schwarber combined to go 12 for 17 on Saturday and Sunday nights against the Mets with a double, a triple, 6 home runs, 13 RBIs, 9 runs, and a walk. That is a dominant performance from two guys. And let's just talk, you know, you mentioned, Justin, that this $300 million payroll has more holes than a $300 million payroll should. That's a true statement, 100% true statement. And yet, there were two $300 million payroll teams on that field on Saturday and Sunday, one with substantially more question marks and holes than the Philadelphia Phillies. Watching the Mets, this is our first chance to really see them this year. Kind of funny, like I was talking to Liz, we talked about this on the Friday edition of the podcast. Bo Bichette's name like didn't come up at all. Like no one cares about, because the Mets are so bad and Bichette has been so bad. He was just like, He was a nothing burger in this entire series, and just even on the, you know, in the front of the fan base's minds, like the Mets have just come in and that team's got no juice, man. That team's got absolutely nothing going on. So
we were afraid
of
them.
To see it, frankly. I mean, they got the Knicks, and there was this great story about Juan Soto. They bought him a ticket to go to one of the Knicks playoff games. I don't know if it was one of the finals games, but they got a ticket so that they could write a whole story about, what do you see? You want to replicate that with the Mets and the championship vibes. We want to bring that back. The team was already in a pretty deep hole at this point that, boy, it just does not seem like they're going to crawl out of it. And I love the graphic that they put on screen that was like, this is the last year each of these New York teams won a championship. Obviously, the Knicks have the most recent championship now. They had not won when this graphic was on screen. They were still cited as having last won their championship in 1973. And it just goes to show the Mets are part of this pool of teams from New York that are one of the most oft-discussed teams that accomplishes nothing.
Nothing.
They just don't do it. You know, like, yeah, they get big news when, you know, oh, we got a new owner and he's going to spend money on, and he's going to get all these players. And there's no reason to not be competitive with the players they get. But boy, there is just always some kind of mess with the Mets. Like it is just an endlessly kind of messy slog for this team. And boy, they just brought it to Citizens Bank Park. And yeah, you're always a little concerned going, maybe they found it. Maybe they spent the right money. Maybe they changed the culture. Maybe they changed the vibes. And then you see them out there and you're like, what is wrong with these guys? You know, I'd already made the point about the non-competitiveness in some areas. And you're just like, as two teams that started 9-19 this season, I did think the Phillies would get better. I wasn't sure the Mets really would. And, you know, it's a long season. Maybe they still have a point where they win 10 games in a row, where they really figure things out. But the Mets that played in Citizens Bank Park this weekend and even won a game, looked completely like, at times, like they were clueless, or thoughtless, I guess is the word. And, yeah, as somebody who does not root for the Mets, it was really appealing and fun to watch.
40 years since the Mets won their last world championship. 40 years since the Mets have last won a title, and I don't think that drought is going to end here in 2026. We should mention Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler. I mean, they didn't need to stand on their heads in these two games, especially Christopher Sanchez, but both of them continued to dominate. Sanchez went 6 innings, gave up 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, lowered the ERA to 1.80. Paul Casella from MLB noted that he's got a Sanchez has 16 starts, a 1.80 ERA, 121 strikeouts through 105 innings. Only 10 other pitchers in baseball history have an ERA of 1.8 or better, and 120 strikeouts over at least 105 innings through their first 16 starts of a season. Now, that's kind of narrowing things down quite a bit, but that's just talking about low ERA, lots of strikeouts, and lots of innings at this stage of a season. Justin Verlander, Clayton Kershaw, Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens, Dwight Gooden, Steve Carlton, Vida Blue, Sam McDowell, and Sandy Koufax, okay? That's like, you can narrow something down as much as you want to in terms of statistics. When you're left with that as your leaderboard, and you're putting Christopher Sanchez in amongst the names, that is having a pretty special season. And then he also noted, now you add in the fact Sanchez has walked only 20 batters this season. That narrows the list down to Sanchez, Verlander, Kershaw, and Pedro. Four guys have done that in baseball history. So a very special season unfolding for Christopher Sanchez. And he's not even the leader in the National League Cy Young race at the moment here in mid-June, which is pretty crazy. Then you also had Zach Wheeler, 5 2/3 innings on Sunday night, 4 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, a 2.11 ERA. And I also want to throw a shout out to Jonathan Bolin, who has become one of the really electric right-handers in the bullpen. Wheeler walked the bases loaded with one out, was able to get a ground ball that allowed a run for the second out, and then John Bolin comes in and just blew some rando Met away. I don't even remember who it was to strand two guys and keep the lead comfortable. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah, he's really it's just his velocity year over year has jumped up by like 3 ticks or something like that. I think I saw. So yeah, great. And this is the formula for this team. This is what we know. And this month, Alec Bohm in June has an OPS of 802. Bryson Stott has an OPS of 791 in June. If you can get four guys hitting like this at the same time, you don't need all nine. You need four guys, really, who are kind of driving the engine. You need like three of your starting pitchers to be pitching pretty well, and you need your bullpen to not be blowing leads. If you can do that, you're going to win, especially in the playoffs with that formula. It's just finding four guys to kind of do it for you at the same time. And right now in June, those are your four guys who are doing it, and you just, you know, you enjoy it while you can and hope it carries over.
I mean, this team was winning, what, 5 of their last 6 series again, even with, as I said, a scheduled loss, basically, with Andrew Painter in the rotation until very recently. So you're right. Score 5-6 runs a night, have 3 starters you can rely on to go 6-7 innings, and a bullpen that, like you said, doesn't blow leads. It sounds simple, but, you know, in a way it is. But those three things are enough to win enough, because you cannot expect Kyle Schwarber to hit 3 home runs a night all season. You can't expect somebody who's hitting today to be hitting tomorrow, especially with this team. You can't expect things to players and teams to play the way that they're projected to play, even at their ceilings, for 162 games. But something's got to be working. And the Phillies have been successful enough to allow for that. And by the way, it was Marcus Semien who Jonathan Bolin struck out.
Okay, thank you.
One of those Mets additions that was supposed to improve their infield defense specifically, and just threw the ball over first base at one point this past weekend.
Oh my God, that was so funny.
Just chucked it straight into the end zone.
So I'm doing some quick math in my head, and if you're talking about where the Phillies are, in Andrew Painter's games this year, the Phillies have a run differential of -45.
Oh, God.
In all other games, the Phillies' run differential coming into the weekend, I believe it was coming into the weekend, was +27. And so then they won by 12 runs on Saturday, so that would make it 39. And then they won by another 4 runs, so that'd be +43. So they have a +43 run differential in all games not started by Andrew Painter. So if you want to get a sense, maybe that's how good the Phillies are. Is you look at the non-Andrew Painter games, just kind of get a sense of, like, you know, that's maybe, you know, part of the issue.
Kind of telling you that, like, Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper can be on a heater, but a solid start from your starter is also going to go a long way in winning a ball game.
Yes, indeed. All right. As for this, as for coming up this weekend, the Phillies pitching plan, or this week, pardon me, they're going to be down in Washington for a 4-game series with the Nationals. The Phillies designated Bryce Wilson for assignment. So that means Alan Rangel will likely, I think, get the call up and will start the game against the Nationals. Either that or they're going to use a bunch of bullpen guys here on Monday night. Jason Stark told 97.5 The Fanatic that he hears Dombrowski is aggressively looking for a depth starter to fill that number five spot. It is an indictment that this team and the farm system doesn't have someone that they can bring up that is in any way a reliable young pitcher, that they didn't go out this offseason and get like one or two of those guys to stick in AAA or AA. Like there should be somebody they can grab, and there just isn't. I mean, it's a real hole in this organization right now. The farm system just not able to produce guys who can come in and help out, that you got to keep going on the waiver wire, and you got to make trades at the major league level to find guys. Because those guys, teams are not trading away pitching depth right now. That's just, you need your minor leagues to do that. So maybe Rangel will surprise and he can fill that number five slot, but it sounds like the Phillies are still actively shopping in that market, as you mentioned a little bit earlier in the podcast, Justin.
Does anybody have any moon-eyed hopes for the Phillies' acquisitions of a number five starter? Because there's some underperforming pitchers out there who might be, you know, contractually ideal to be traded by their current teams. For instance, the Mets.
All of the Mets.
Freddie Peralta or David Peterson strike your fancy?
I'd take a chance on Peralta's. He had a bad game. I mean, he's gonna be more than a number five, right? No.
Five inning Freddie. Yeah, I wouldn't want him to be a number one or two starter. Here's a name for you, Sandy Alcantara. Anyone?
Oh, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, do it in a heartbeat.
Put him in a new environment.
Is this an over extension for a number five role, I guess? Because his ERA is over four. He's struggling the way he has the past few years. But we all know Sandy Alcantara once was a number one starter. So is that a market you would want the Phillies to play in? A guy who is maybe a fallen frontline starter? Or is that going to even be too expensive?
They have a lot of minor leaguers. And for what we've been saying, a lot of them aren't very good. What the Marlins run right now are lots of lottery tickets. They're not in a place where they want to purchase anything, build anything for the future. All they want is money right now. They want players right now. Because any of them could work out and turn into a future trade chip. So I don't think it would even cost that much. I mean, it might cost more than the Phillies want to give up. But if they focus on prospects and not money, I think they could do it. They might have to overpay, but I don't think they'd have to overpay with good guys.
Real Muto was considered the best catcher in baseball when they traded for him, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that wound up the centerpiece was Sixto. Yeah, Sixto. And obviously that didn't really work out. But at the time, even I was kind of like, Sixto.
Well, with this team's inability to produce prospects, like develop prospects, I'm trading anyone at this point.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You could trade anybody at this deadline, and I don't think it would hurt the Phillies long term, because I think we need to recognize that they're a 15 and below team when it comes to farm system. I think that just might be where they stay. It's lower. Not one of their strengths. And I think continuing to hope that they're going to radically change something is only going to drive us crazier. I'm for them trading anybody, John, just like you said.
Yeah.
I feel like we just turned their poor player development from the minors into a strength.
Because
there's no reason to like think, well, this will get better. So why not trade anybody knowing that we will never regret it?
Untethered to anyone. Exactly.
The problem is you have a limited number of guys who have been developed properly, who other teams want to acquire.
It's a double-edged sword, I think is what you're saying.
A double-edged sword, and we're kind of just swinging it wildly. But, you know, somebody will walk into it. Might be the Marlins.
You just need the trading team to be stupid.
I do think Alcantara is going to cost more than what Dombrowski wants to pay for a number four or five starter right now. And so I think you're probably looking at like the David Petersons of the world and guys like that who would come in and just kind of be that fifth starter of 4.5 ERA. There's no way you can have a guy with an ERA over five pitching every 5 days. Not, you just can't. So if it's a guy who's only going to give you a five ERA, nah, you're just fine. Let Ron Hill do that. You know what I mean? Like, let Bryce Wilson do that. You need someone who's at least going to keep you in the fours, like a Noah Syndergaard 2022 type acquisition. Was that 22 or 23? Syndergaard. I think it was 22. Was it 22? Okay.
It was 22.
No, it was 23 because Bailey Falter was their number five in 22.
I thought it was 22 because they got him and Marsh at the deadline.
You're right.
Marsh was a deadline.
You're right.
Pickup.
Right. They had Noah Syndergaard and Bailey Falter. That's right, because Syndergaard didn't make any starts, I don't think, in the playoffs. It was
No, they left him right off the maybe playoff. Maybe he
did. Oh, Noah Syndergaard did make a start.
Yeah, okay. I think he did.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on, really?
Yeah, he did. I remember that now.
That's not right. No.
Postseason pitching 2022. He started in the NLDS. He started in the NLDS and he started a World Series game.
That's right.
For the love of God.
I remember the Powder Blues. He started a World Series game in the Powder Blues. Yes,
he
did.
And he looked real good. I remember that. Yeah.
That's right. He appeared in the NLCS too. He just didn't make a start.
That's right. That's right. All right. So looking ahead, the Phillies have four games against the Nationals in Washington, and it is the only team on their schedule until the All-Star break with a winning record. The Nationals are 40-38. They just lost two out of three down in Tampa against the Rays. But they've got four against the Nationals in Washington. Then they go to New York for three more against the Mets. Then they come home and they host the Pirates for a four game series. The Pirates are a 500 team right now, 39-39. Then they finish off with nine straight games on the road. Kansas City at 32-46, terrible team. They go to Cincinnati for three against the Reds, 37-39. Reds played them tough earlier in the year. And then they go to Detroit for three against an awful Tigers team at 33-44. Over their next 23 games, they play four games against a team with a winning record. And that's this coming week against the Nationals. Their opponents have a combined winning percentage of .463 over the next 23 games, a little over 3 weeks. The Phillies have a better record than all of the teams they're going to play over these next 23 games. And so the other side of that coin is they only have four home games over the next 23. So they're going to be playing a lot of games on the road here heading into the All-Star break, which, you know, maybe mitigates the record of the teams they're playing against a little bit. How are we feeling, Liz, about this record, about this schedule going into the All-Star break? A lot of teams that are mediocre to bad, but it's also a lot of road games. And the Phillies have been a decent road team this year, but, you know, how much harder does that make things, do you think?
I think it makes things a little bit harder. But the way the Phillies are playing right now against mediocre to bad teams is exactly how we want them to play them. So they'll have to give me a reason to be worried right now, because I like what I'm seeing, and I think a lot of other people do too. If someone's worried about these upcoming series, they are definitely looking, I think, at the negative right now very hard, which is everyone's prerogative, but mm-hmm. I think I'm not worried at all. I don't think a lot of people should be.
Yeah, Justin, the Phillies are 25-14 against teams that currently do not hold a playoff spot, and that would include all of the teams on this list, although the Nationals are right on the cusp, I think like half a game off or whatever.
Great. Every series following the All-Star break, and then certainly after the trade deadline, is going to be about where the Phillies are in various races, and wins are going to ultimately be the determinant to figure out what level of wild card team they are. I'm counting them out from winning the division at this point, but statistically, numerically, it's still on the table.
Six and a half games. Not impossible, yeah.
Yep.
Winning more is always going to help your team. I guess you could look at like the Phillies winning against the Braves in 2011 that allowed the Cardinals to make the postseason and then beat them in the postseason. But barring any monkey's paw situation, winning is always good. And playing teams that you can beat then is also good. And if this team gets to the postseason with a terrible record against the other teams in the postseason, they'll still get to play in the postseason. So that's how I'm looking at this. And, you know, you can talk all you want about, oh, they're not good. They're projected to win because they didn't beat them before. before. Well, they pretty much made hamburger meat out of the Dodgers in the regular season last year, and then look what happened. So
yeah.
Whatever games you can. And if you're good at beating mediocre teams, be glad there's a bunch of mediocre teams on your schedule. The Phillies can beat all these teams. I'm not going to whip out my classic, they have no reason to lose any of these games, because I don't feel that way about the Nationals or the Reds or even the Royals, really. Like, those teams can still beat the Phillies if, you know, on a bad day or a rough day. But they can really make some hay with this schedule, and they need to, because they put themselves in a hole early. So it doesn't matter who you can beat if you're winning games. It just means you're racking up the wins, and that's what this team needs to do.
Well, we'll see how they do starting this week against the Nationals. I'm going to have to have my son on the midweek podcast to give us all an analysis.
A resident Nationals expert, yeah. Yes.
Yep. Our hitting season Washington mm-hmm. Nationals expert guru.
Our correspondent.
Correspondent, yep, Washington Nationals
we
correspondent.
We called him a friend of the show, and he said, let's not go that far. And yeah. Fair enough.
Let's just keep the relationship professional.
Like, I got my own brand to worry about, is where his exact words.
And I respect that. I respect that for sure.
He braced him well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. All right, let's finish up with some final thoughts. Justin, anything final to wrap up with?
Yeah, so it's the end of June. We've got one more new episode of The Dirty Inning over at the Hit and Season Patreon. We'll be recording this week. But I also just finished the research on our All-Star Edition Dirty Inning, which is obviously going to be played up a big deal. We're going to be making a big deal out of the All-Star Game, obviously here, but then also over at the Patreon as the Phillies host the All-Star Game for the first time since 1996. We've got an episode coming out about their absolutely horrible June in 1996 in which they lost 21 out of 27 games.
I remember
going into the month that they were hosting the All-Star Game and were one of the least
times.
Represented teams at their own All-Star Game. And yeah, we'll talk about that June. We'll talk about the little hiccup of the spasm of success that they kind of found at the beginning of June before the All-Star Game. Before another really, really frustrating loss going into the All-Star break that year. But it'll be all 1996, talking about that team, disappointment of that team, talk about late-stage Pete Incaviglia, talk about late-stage Terry Mulholland, talk about early-stage Ricky Bitalico. It's just such a weird transitional era for Phillies baseball in which they happened to have hosted the All-Star game, because it was a year that ended in 6, and you could make an anniversary about 1776. So we got a lot of fun waiting to come up over at the Hittin' Season Patreon. You can find all that at Hittin' Season, patreon.com/hittin'season.
I will be there for that one. A dark season, 1996. Mm-hmm. Truly dark. Every bit as dark as 1941 and anything else that happened in that time frame. Just, just awful. Liz, final thoughts?
With the Phillies visiting the Nationals this week, I'm going to go to some games. If you're interested in meeting up, ping me. I love fans. Fans are cool. I can't believe that there are fans of this podcast, because we're just three people who talk to each other and hit the record button. If we're lucky, we hit the record button. So, yeah, I'm excited about going to some baseball games. They're my first baseball games of the year so far. So,
all right. Well, Liz, enjoy beautiful Nationals Park, a memorable stadium. It's not great, but it's fine. You know what Nationals Park is?
Perfect Solis Park.
It's fine. They play baseball games there, and it's fine. You know, that's all you need to know. It's not great to get in and out of there, but you know what?
They spent so much money on it.
It's fine. You're not. Jeez. Seagulls will not eat you alive or anything. Like, as you get there, you know. But it's they play the baseball. The lights work. The grass is green. It'll be fine. So enjoy your time at Nationals Park. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And just a reminder, if you're someone who likes to watch these roundtable episodes of the podcast, we can be found over at the WHYY YouTube channel. If you subscribe to the channel, you'll get every episode. It'll show up on your phone. It'll show up on your smart TV, however you like to watch us. But I know that many of you, most of you probably, listen to us. And so if you have a friend or a family member who loves the Phillies, who wants to follow the team, and they don't know about Hittin' Season, it's your job to educate them on that. So tell them about the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. There we are. And you can also send them over to the YouTube channel if they want to watch the show there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.